This episode is brought to you by Amazon. Visit bit.ly/Amazon Backlog Battle, all one word, whenever you want to buy anything on Amazon.com.
This is the Backlog Battle Podcast, episode 183.
Fun times with existentialism.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Backlog Battle Podcast. This is Alex.
And this is Anthony.
How's it going, sir?
It's going pretty good. Some nifty new things came out this week, so it's all good.
Yeah.
A lot of nifty new things.
Like what?
Well, we got Hellblade, which I know we'll talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe. A little bit in depth.
Maybe.
I
honestly, I haven't really played it since the last time I showed it to you, so... You know,
which people will be able to see soon.
Yes, exactly. So by the time this comes out, which is going to be Wednesday, you know, like whenever these podcast episode comes out, like tomorrow, which will be a Thursday at 8 a.m., you guys will actually get to see our playthrough of just the first 30 minutes of Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice.
Yeah, it caused us great duress and distress.
Yeah, I actually kept watching it over and over because I think it's probably one of the best, you know, like videos we've ever done in the Alex and Anthony Try Playing Video Game series. So,
oh, shit.
I think it's
they try.
Yeah, well, that's the title, my friend. It's Alex and Anthony Try Playing Video Games because, you know, like a lot of people say let's plays and I'm like, yeah, well, you know, that's nice. But you're really just trying to play video games because you're trying to commentate on everything. So we're going to try to play the video game while we're commentating. That's really what Let's Plays are anyway. So In case you guys haven't checked those out, we have like, by tomorrow, we're going to have like at least four of them out. Like we did like Yakuza 0, we did Valkyria Revolution, we did Prey, which was our very first one. And, you know, now it's Hellblade. So if you want to check it out, it's just go to youtube.com/mybacklogbattle. There you go. There's the plug for the YouTube channel.
Sounds good. And then we also got some new characters coming out for a couple games. There is Starfire came out this week for Injustice 2, which I'll talk about later on.
Okay.
I am liking the new characters, and I think 9 is a lot of characters, don't you? Or 10 if you count Darkseid.
Like as in as part of a DLC pack?
Yeah. Well, in total.
Do you think it are going to have a season 2? Like, you know, season pass for Injustice 2?
Well, okay. So, for those that don't know, I did buy... And I'm answering your question, Alex. I bought the Ultimate Edition, which includes the season pass. So, all the 9... The 10 characters that we know, Darkseid, Red Hood, Sub-Zero, Starfire, and then the 6 after that, I'm getting those. Beyond that, though, I don't know.
Yeah.
We might get a season 2.
Yeah. I'm guessing, because like they did it with Mortal Kombat X. It worked out pretty well from what I've seen, right? So, I'm just kind of like thinking like, yeah, they'll probably release a Game of the Year edition next year, which is also $60 with all the DLC characters, and then release a second season. But, you know, that's just my thing.
Well, here's the thing. With that, I wouldn't be surprised if they did that. And they have gone on record saying that NetherRealm, with each game they make, they want to push the number of characters they release further and further.
Right.
And if, you know, you pay attention to their pattern, as from the last maybe 5 years or so, it's been Mortal Kombat Injustice, Mortal Kombat Injustice. So next, it'll be a Mortal Kombat game, and I guarantee you they'll even push the envelope from Injustice 2 for the amount of characters even further.
I feel, though, that there's, you know, like, while it's great that there's a lot of characters, there's something kooky that goes on with NetherRealm games that, you know, kind of, I feel like, you know, like, the balancing of the characters is, leaves something to be desired. Like, it's, you know, like, let me give you an example. I follow a lot of FGC people who are, like, really mm-hmm. super into Injustice 2, right? You know?
Right.
And they actually showed the Red Hood doing just a low kick on Poison Ivy, and this is the new patch, and it's just going through. It's not even hitting, and you know, Poison Ivy is just in an idle pose, and I'm like, wait, what? Like, you know, and that was kind of telling, and the fact that, I mean, I'm not saying that this happens all the time for NetherRealm games, but it seems to me the recent development team that's been working on NetherRealm games has had a tough time trying to figure out a good balance, you know, with Injustice and also, like, a lump in, like, Mortal Kombat XL, because that kind of started suffering that as well. And, you know me, like, I'm kind of a stickler when it comes to, like, you know, like, buying fighting games these days because I don't have a lot of time on it. Like, come on, like, hopefully, like, you guys can make it work. Like,
I have to play devil's advocate because I actually own the game. And while I don't know about the Red Hood, I cannot comment on that incident because I haven't seen that myself. What I can tell you is Injustice 2 is a fairly balanced game. What I think hurts it, and this is still from my review from, what, maybe 2 months ago?
Sure.
A couple months ago. The one thing that I still believe hurts the game is the equipment system to a degree. Now, it's not bad. It doesn't break it, but I still think it's a little weird, the equipment system is. And I mm-hmm. think, you know, when you do equipment for a fighting game, I think you could learn a thing or two from Namco. Because I think they do equipment or customization better than other companies. Having played both Tekken 7 extensively and Injustice 2 throughout the summer, I can say I like both games equally. I gave them the same fucking score. Pretty much, for different reasons.
Right.
But I can argue that one game does some things better, and the other game does some things better.
Right.
And what I can tell you, though, is Tekken does have balance issues. But let's also remember, Tekken games have always had balance issues, and you know this, Alex.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, and Injustice, I feel, is better balanced than Tekken 7. But again, like I said, and I'm not going to go in depth because, you know, you guys want to hear them. Those episodes are on the website and, you know, the reviews are put in, I guess, the description, right? Mm-hmm. The reviews will be noted in the description.
Right.
Go listen to those reviews for my opinions on those games in depth. But I can tell you both games are very solid fighting games. And I think Injustice 2 wins the balance between that and Tekken.
Mm-hmm.
But someone will ask, well, then why do you give Tekken the same score? And I say, well, Tekken, it's kind of expected, you know, because mm-hmm. Tekken is, and it's not a pass by any means. It's just Tekken is, you know, like Paul, you know, the character Paul, right?
Yeah.
He's always been broken in every fucking game.
That's the thing. Balance in fighting games, I feel like it should be talked about by pros. And the reason why I say this is because they're the ones who've actually played the game extensively mm-hmm. between the both of us. And personally, I think that Tekken 7 is actually the most balanced out of all the Tekkens. And it might not feel that way for you and I. Like, I think you mentioned Lucky Chloe is like a pretty OP character.
No. But I won't disagree with that either, having played every single Tekken game, no.
Right.
I'm saying compared between that and Injustice 2, they're both balanced. But I can agree it is the most balanced Tekken. I think Lucky Chloe's a little broken, and I think Paul, but that's always been Paul, but the rest of the characters don't feel broken. And even at that, I can take down a good Paul. The thing is if you look at other Tekkens, though, and you're right, your fighting game friends or fighting game people you follow are right, and I'll tell you why. You go back to something like Tekken 3, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And a character that we talked about who was licensed for the game, Gon, remember Gon, the dinosaur?
Sure.
That character was broken as all shit.
Yeah.
He was a completely broken character. You look at Tekken 5, and a lot of those characters, I think Raven, when mm-hmm. he was first introduced in that game, he was pretty bad.
When Raven was a dude.
Yeah, Raven was a dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude Raven.
Yeah.
I don't know the story behind that, to be honest.
I don't know either, but, you know, like, I was really surprised when, like, Raven popped out in 7, and I'm like, all right, you're a girl now. Cool. Okay.
It's still the same character, technically, so.
Technically, yeah, but they're we need to balance out the genders, and I'm like, okay, whatever. I'm not going to go into that, like, loophole. But
No.
But going back to what I said, though, it was, like, really, you know, like, I don't know, like, I feel like Injustice, you know, like, obviously, like, there are merits to Injustice, right? Like, the fact that it can reach out and grab people from the mainstream because of the way that it's built, right? But, you know, like, I'll maintain what I said and say, like, that, you know, like, I think I'm just totally done with serious fighting games. Like, you know, like, I feel like unless it's, like, something like ARMS, which I can play a little bit casually and still kind of pick up and play and learn a lot, not knowing, like, on, you know, like, 15-hit combos or shit like that, I think I can deal with that, you know?
I think that's fair. For me, it's, I still like the hardcore fighting games. I play them. I have fun with them. That's about it. Mm-hmm. And if you play online, let's be honest, most FGC people are against online, so you won't run into them. They rather play face-to-face. That's how they do it.
Sometimes they do, though, especially if they're just trying to practice execution, you know? Like, it's not ideal, but, you know, like, there's a lot of stream, you know, like, you know, fighting game players that do stream their games and stuff, and, man, it's scary if you fucking face them online and shit, you know? So...
Well, you know. I know, you know, with a lot of the games, you can kind of keep yourself in the same battle range, and I do that, and I progress as I get better, so that's how I do it, but, you know, you can kind of peek at a while and then stay in that area, so I'm okay with that.
Okay.
So that's, I mean, fighting games are great, and, I mean, you could literally keep it open for casual play. I think Tekken 7, I'll be honest, and both Injustice, while they're not as casual as, say, ARMS is, I'm sure. I haven't played ARMS, so keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
But I can say, though, that, you know, they're not technically hard like other fighting games. And I think, you know, I'm looking at certain fighters, i.e. King of Fighters and the Arc System games and things like that, you know?
Execution heavy.
Yeah, they're very... Though Arc System Work games and SNK games are far more complicated than anything Capcom, Namco, or NetherRealm produces.
Okay.
And that's not an insult to their games. I think it hurts the Arc System Works games in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're way too complicated. They're almost convoluted in a way. And,
right.
You know, having played it, you know, the other big fighter that's come out in the last a year, other than, you know, what we talked about, King of Fighters, you know, you and I were not a fan of. You know, we just didn't dig that game because it's, I think it's too tech heavy. Now, if people like that, that's cool. But for me and you, I'm a little bit more casual, hardcore than you are, but I'm still casual in a way. So I prefer something less heavy, and you prefer something like ARMS, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
So,
speaking of which, actually, like, you know, with balance fixes, it's kind of interesting because, like, ARMS actually got a balance patch this week. You know, and it's what's interesting is, like, a lot of people kept saying, like, well, Master Mummy is really, like, a low tier character. And, you know, for people who don't know or haven't played it, and of course for you, Anthony, like, you know, Master Mummy's main power is he gains 10 health every time he holds a block. Now, if you hold a block, you can get thrown, obviously, like most fighting games and stuff. It's like just a free, you know, a free throw pretty much. But, you know, the tick to get, like, 10 health is so low that it's practically almost useless. And you know, like, because he's such a big character as well, he's such a big target, like, it's so easy to just kind of flail ARMS at him and stuff and, you know, eventually get your super meter up. Also, another thing with ARMS is you have the same meter gain even if you miss your punch. And that's something that the developers actually fixed in the latest patch. So if you whiff a punch, you don't gain as much in the super meter anymore. Because what used to happen is, you know, people would just flail their ARMS to build meter, and then they'll just have meter, like, twice or even three times during one round of a match, which is kind of insane if you think about it, you know? So
I gotcha.
Yeah, so Master Mummy has now been given a movement buff, so he can actually, like, dodge. I want to say dodge and move faster, but I can be wrong. The same thing with Mechanica, who is also just as big. But this is kind of like what I'm getting at here. Like, Nintendo, who we've talked many times before about, like, not knowing online, is somehow really working hard to make sure that ARMS is super balanced out, you know? And that's very surprising for a company who, you know, we make fun of, like, that they don't care about online. That they're,
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, that being said, like, there's many other, like, kind of modifications that they did. They moved the training mode, like, on the top of the menu now because it was somewhere hidden, like, somewhere else for some fucking reason. You want to talk about, like, how arcade mode is hidden underneath a menu?
Yeah.
The training mode is hidden underneath a menu that doesn't make sense.
Let's talk about this for a quick second because I noticed a lot of games are doing, not just fighting games, but some other games have been doing this lately where some significant modes are kind of buried. Have you noticed this? And I don't get that. I don't get why they're buried. And I'm not saying there's a trend, let's just bury all these fucking modes. You know what I mean, Alex? Mm-hmm. It's just something I've noticed lately. Do you know what I mean?
I haven't played a lot of fighting games lately, but
No. I'm talking some other games, and I'll even talk about it when I get to some of the games I'm going to talk about this week, but yeah, it's kind of shitty, dude.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, I have no opinion of it because I honestly, like, I haven't noticed it in any of the games that I played, so shrug.
Yeah, shrug.
Yep. So speaking of which, like, to kind of, like, you know, get away from, like, balance and fighting games and stuff and this whole discussion, which, you know, like, we'll come back to Injustice 2 later on. There's some...
Wait. I hate to interrupt you, but I want to address something with you about balance real quick, okay? Not fighting games.
Okay.
But, and I'm going to give you an example, so let me finish this because I've been wanting to talk to you about this forever and this is the perfect opportunity. Have you ever... So when we think of balance, we think of it in terms of fighting games and even to a lesser extent, multiplayer shooters, correct?
Sure.
But let's be honest, balance is an issue that almost every game deals with. And I was talking to a friend recently about Final Fantasy VI. Okay, so let's bring an RPG in this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he and I had a discussion, and I brought up the point that it's my favorite Final Fantasy, don't get me wrong, but we can overly admit, I think, that game is not balanced, especially towards the end. Could you not agree?
I haven't played 6 towards the end since the 90s, so I can't say anything about that.
All right. Well, I'm going to tell you why I think that. You at least remember what the most powerful spell in that game is, right? Ultima?
Sure.
Okay. So you know all the tricks where you could get, like, Mimic and Dual Cast and all that shit, right?
Right.
Where you can basically kill God Kefka in one move when you have, like, Go-Go mimicking 3 people and cast, like, Ultima 8 times
right.
in that fucking game. Okay? And then the same can be said about pretty much Final Fantasy VII. I don't know so much about 8, but Final Fantasy VII is another one that can be imbalanced with the same thing, with Knights of the Round being mimicked and all that, with the material combos. So my question is, and I want you, this is why I brought up those examples. Do you think we should give single-player games a pass with balance and not multiplayer games? I want to know your opinion, and I'll give you my answer after you give yours.
My answer is yes, because those specific instances that you mentioned, not everybody's going to go through it. And, you know, you brought up Final Fantasy VII as an example. I can tell you now, I never got Knights of the Round. Never.
And I never have either.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, it's just stuff I know. I'm going by secondhand knowledge. I have a friend that every time he plays, he does that shit. So,
and that's fine, but
yeah, that's fine.
That's your play style, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, but, you know, to say that, you know, that, oh, something is OP in a single player game and that's not okay kind of situation. I mean, for sure, like, yes, if you want, if you're a developer, if you're the guy who made the game and you feel that it's OP and you want to fix it, that's totally fine. That's your prerogative. That's your vision. Right? Like, that's your call. You know, like, nobody else is gonna, you know, complain, like, oh, it's too hard, too easy. Well, somebody will, right? It's the fucking era.
The nature of people.
Well, the nature of people, you're right. And, you know, for me, the way that I see it is that, you know, like, the difficulty of the game is gonna change depending on the person, right? Like, there was actually an interesting Reddit article or Reddit thread that somebody opened who said that, you know, like, you know, can we just all agree that difficulty, you know, difficult games equals fun? And man, he got shot down real hard. And not because like people, you know, people disagreed with, you know, that, you know, that video, that hard video games can't be fun, but that they're not mutually exclusive to one another. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, you can still have fun in a video game and have absolutely zero challenge whatsoever, you know? And really, like, it all depends on the game itself. Because, you know, the one thing that I like that we do on this podcast, you know, like, as far as our reviews go, is that when we rate games, it's our personal experience. Like, that one number from 1 to 5 encapsulates our entire experience with the whole game. Like, it's not like individual things like difficulty or fun factor or replay. Remember when GamePro used to do that shit?
Yeah, with the stupid fucking head.
Yeah.
Remember the stupid heads, like the guy's head was about to blow the fuck up?
Yeah. That actually annoys the shit out of me these days because because it's useless. Like, how, you know, so, okay, great, you had fun. That's fucking fantastic. Does that tell me that I'm going to have fun with it? No. And you know, if you and I remember too, back in the day, like GamePro's, like, you know, reviews were so short that you couldn't even get any sort of information about the game.
Right.
You know, but going back to your topic though of balancing in video games, it's all relative to, like, you know, whether or not a huge segment of the population, I feel, just can't get through a part of the game, right? One of the early you know, like, violators of this rule is actually Traveler's Tales. You know,
okay.
Like, if you remember them, like, they, you know, they now make, like, the Lego games and stuff like that, right? Like, you know, they're kind of happy-go-lucky now. But back in the day, you try to play Toy Story 2 on fucking Dreamcast, and you can't tell me that that was actually an easy-ass fucking game, because that was super difficult, too. You know? And Colony Wars 1 and 2 for the PlayStation 1. That game was shit fucking difficult. And, you know, like, they didn't care about, like, whether or not, like, it was too difficult for a huge segment of the population. But let me bring up, you know, a more recent example, Anthony. And this is really going to be, like, you know, an interesting conversation, because this is a more recent example. There is a roguelike kind of ball rolling game. I don't really know what it is. I've what? Only heard of the name. It's on the Switch and on other platforms. It's called Tumbleseed. And
okay.
It was notorious because it was so punishing and it was so difficult. Right? Like,
right.
And it's because of it, actually, that even the developers said that nobody bought their game. No one. Like, they didn't even, like, meet, you know, they didn't even break even. You know, and so they actually issued a patch to make it a little bit easier. But, you know, like, but I guess this also kind of supports what I said earlier, that if you're the developer, it's your prerogative to figure out whether your game is too difficult. There's things that are OP or not. But personally, I could care less. If it's OP, fucking great. That's, you know, that's the prerogative of the developer. Okay. They willed it so. The BFG 9000, it will be always OP, and that's totally fine.
Okay, so I agree with you pretty much. I think the difference with multiplayer and single player is the obvious. There's more than one person playing, correct? I think that's the obvious thing.
Yeah, it's affecting like multiple people outside of your current space, you know.
Okay. But I think most OP things, particularly in JRPGs, are time-consuming and can be difficult to get, i.e. we never got Knights of the Round. Why did we never get Knights of the Round? I'll tell you why I didn't. I didn't have the patience for chocobo breeding. I still don't.
Right.
I'll get Omnislash. I'm sure you can. That's not hard.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get Omnislash?
No.
That's not hard to get, but still.
He uses it anyway at the end, so it doesn't matter.
I like using it on other things, though, but I'm just saying. But again, it's playstyle, right? It's playstyle.
Right.
It goes back to the playstyle. And a lot of the things I mentioned, like doing the stuff with Ultima, you know, it's not difficult per se, but it's time consuming, I would say, more so than difficult.
Right.
And, you know, like there's a lot of games, oh, get the legendary sword or whatever the fuck, you know, a lot of that shit is hard to do, right? So I think OP in most single player games come at a price.
Mm-hmm.
They come at a heavy price. I don't think I've ran into many games where the most powerful weapon or whatever was difficult to get, was easy to get. Like, for example, I remember I got the most powerful weapon rather easily in Tales of Vesperia, but there's a caveat with that. Okay, Alex? You actually had to get gems to get it to its full strength for each weapon, and that was hard to get. So technically, it wasn't the most powerful weapon, but still, you know? You know, it's kind of that caveat. And then let's go back to your discussion about difficulty, which you brought some good points. I think I'm thinking about the way games were designed back in the day and the way games are designed now. I'm a big fan, a lot of you guys know, of Bloodborne. You know, Alex, not too much, but I'm a big fan of Bloodborne.
I'm still a fan of it. I just can't beat it.
You just can't beat it?
Yeah.
You know what? Fuck that. You know what? I'm going to help you. That's going to be one of our Let's Plays. I'm going to help you beat that beast because that does have multiplayer.
Well, we'll try playing. Let's put it that way.
Let's try. And you have to get that bell. I'll help you with the with the beast. With the what's his name?
Cleric Beast?
Yeah, Cleric Beast. I'll help you with the Cleric Beast.
Sure.
Okay. Offers on the table. Anyway, But with a game like Bloodborne, I feel that the difficulty is challenging. It's very challenging, but it's not cheap. There's a difference. And if you want to look at an old game that was cheap, and again, remember, game design was a lot different, so you can't fault them for being cheap on purpose, but you can certainly make an argument that Ninja Gaiden, a game that I love, has cheap difficulty.
I would even go further back and say Ultimate Ghosts and Goblins is pretty fucking cheap.
Oh, you know, you that whole series is cheap, and I think that's deliberate. Let's use that as a better example, because I don't think the flaws in Ninja Gaiden were technically deliberate, but we can sure as fuck tell you that when you beat the final boss and it tells you to replay the game to get the true ending, that's a fucking, that pisses me off. I used to love those games, but is that, don't you agree that's kind of a asshole-ish thing to do?
That's totally a douchey thing to do, man. Ugh, that's like, a lot of people like love that series, but I'm like, holy shit, I can't. I would hate myself if I got to the end and realized, oh yeah, by the way, you got to replay all through that bullshit again.
And it's not easy bullshit to play through. It's not easy bullshit. It's all hard. And that's the thing about it. So I think that's deliberate cheapness, as opposed to Demon Souls or Dark Souls or whatever, or Bloodborne, you know? There's a huge difference in that.
Right.
So I think, I don't know. I think there's cheap, and then there's, you know, regularly challenging. Yeah. Now, let me ask you a question. This ball, roguelike ball game, do you think it was cheap difficult from what you heard, or do you think it was just not designed well, or what do you think?
It was
from
just
what you
really
know?
Difficult. Like, they thought that it was okay, and they reveled in the fact that they were a roguelike as well, but people just didn't get attracted to the idea anyway, right? Like, so attraction happens first when it comes to games, and then you play it, and then you're like, you know, this is pretty good. But with a game, with a name like Tumbleseed, and then you basically say, like, by the way, it's a fucking roguelike, those two kind of don't match, right? Like, there's a psychology here that's happening where it's like, okay, it's a game about rolling a ball. By the way, you fuck up once, it's over. You're like, that doesn't make any fucking sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a disconnect here, you know?
Right.
Because rolling a ball shouldn't be that difficult. But apparently, according to this game, it's supposed to be the most difficult thing in the fucking world. Okay.
I don't get it.
It's weird. So, I don't know if this actually improved, like, their sales at all, like, you know, for the people with Tumbleseed. But, man, I was so happy that I didn't buy that after, like, people said, like, it was too fucking hard. I was like, oh, man. And you know, sometimes, like, there'll be hipster reviewers who say, like, yeah, it's difficult, but it was a fulfilling experience. And I'm like, no, fuck that. Like, no. Like, there's a reason why people didn't buy it, you know? But going back to the whole point of this conversation, though, you like that? I should be doing more voices. It's kind of... It's,
hipster.
Yeah. Yeah. With a lisp, right?
I think most video game reviewers are hipsters, but no, let's not get started in that.
I don't think so. There are certain like places that you could tell like totally are. But going back to what we're saying though, like, you know, to your point, games are balanced though. Like, you know, if they weren't balanced at all, like, there wouldn't be any testers in the fucking credits. They're responsible for actually making sure that the game is balanced out. So the whole idea, the whole notion that single players need to be balanced, well, it's already happening. It's just that, like you said, if we compare our standards now compared to back then, it's very, very different, right? Like, mm-hmm. we're a lot more rigid here, and we're a lot more mindful that maybe if your game is trying to attract a mainstream audience, maybe you shouldn't make it too fucking impossible, you know? So that, and that's my call. Like, I used to test video games. Like, you know, a mm-hmm. lot of, you know, What Culture Gaming, which is, you know, like, actually, like, I'm a subscriber on YouTube. They're pretty funny British dudes. But, like, they said that there was a video series that said, like, the top 10 video games that make you feel like an idiot for, like, you know, putting the difficulty to easy, right? And one of them was actually Spider-Man for PlayStation, which I worked on. You know, mm-hmm. and, you know, and I get what they're saying, right? Like, the fact that you were playing kid mode basically meant, like, that, you know, like, you really couldn't skip cutscenes or anything like that. But the reason why we added it was because, let's say you literally are a kid, we don't want you to skip through the story. We want you to actually get the story. That's why kid mode is there, you know, and it is on purpose for kids, you know, but at the same time... I get mm-hmm. like I get the complaint because, man, skipping cutscenes, that's a thing that we should have, right? Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tricky balance, right? You know right. what I mean? When you do things like that. And remember, that was a long time ago. And I have played that Spider-Man game. And to be honest, I like that Spider-Man game. I don't know how well it aged. Last time I played was 2012, maybe. And I thought Ooh. It aged pretty good.
Yeah.
But that was 5 years ago.
I don't remember. You know what's funny? I want to kind of show my girlfriend like the game just to be like, hey, babe, this is what I worked on.
Back in the day. You should also show her Call of Duty 3.
I don't have Call of Duty 3. And I don't want to buy Call of Duty 3. I do want to buy it on the Wii though, because like I actually made one of the control schemes. Like,
oh,
it's the one that personally I think makes a lot more sense than anything else, and I'm really sad that it didn't become a standard, but oh well, say love
it. It trips me out that when I look at the Spider-Man book and I see your name in the back, I'm like, motherfucker, my podcast partner.
Right? Like,
there you go.
Yeah. But
that game, I remember it was pretty good. And the cutscenes were like not even a minute long.
Yeah, they're pretty short.
So they're not like Persona 5 cutscenes or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Where even when you fast forward them, it takes a while. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, unless there's anything else you want to add with this discussion, I think like we pretty much covered it pretty well.
Nah, I think we're pretty good. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Persona 5, just on a brief note, I have been playing a little bit of that lately.
I noticed.
And I have to say, I fucking love that game. I'm in my second playthrough. And speaking of the balance thing and such, it's a lot easier this time because I'm going through, you know, I have all my social stats maxed, right? And I have some pretty beefy personas.
Sure.
So I'm just wrecking shit.
Yeah, but yeah, you know, I mean, it is New Game Plus. That's the whole point of a New Game Plus, is so that you can actually have fun the second time around you play, you know?
But I did try fighting the twins, and they killed me.
Ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I might have to wait a while for that.
I'll tell you what, though. Like, I'll give you a guideline. Like, you have to beat them before December. And I there is a specific date where they would become unavailable, but they will become unavailable like around December. And I'll just letting you know right now, if you want that trophy, like you have to fight them before December.
I think I know why.
No, it's not. Because since they'll be available anyway, you could technically still, you know, talk to them, but they don't give you any indication that they won't be available after that, or at least the fight won't be available.
See,
you know,
I'm still in the museum.
Right.
Second playthrough, so I'm not terribly far in the game. Total hours though, I've clocked in 135.
Right.
Total hours. But yeah, I'm still in that second dungeon. And what's nice is now that I have more time, it's easier to just get those social links done. And I'm like almost halfway through some of them already. So
right.
That's nice.
Well, I'll tell you this, like, I'll try to remind you, just basically like give me an update on what's going on with your Persona 5 stuff. Mm-hmm. But like, I'll try to remind you next time so that, you know, you won't get fucked over, because we actually reached the end and we realized that we couldn't fight the twins anymore in our new game plus. And we're like, well, fuck, I guess we gotta play through the game again.
Yeah, that's oh shit.
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of other saves, but like, you know, playing through, you know, the game like backwards, it's kind of, you know, a bummer, you know.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah.
So moving on, I'll talk briefly about Xenoblade real quick. I'm liking the story. I'm liking the story. Okay, but as I play through the story, the Takahashi tropes are coming through that are familiar in his games.
Okay.
Like the ideas he uses. For example, Hidden Empire in the Skies, that's in there again.
Okay.
Ideas, just a lot of tropes that he's used. The idea of God and existentialism and things like that, all of that is coming through.
Oh, boy.
A protagonist who's dealing with his innermost thoughts and feelings, that's in there. And I'm not saying a lot of protagonists don't, but the way he does it is in that. But I'm liking the story, and I will say this, it's much more, how can I say it? Not as convoluted as Xenogears is. And again, that's my favorite game of all time, but it is convoluted. Again, I think part of that, though, is because of the production issues that we've talked about many times on the show with that game. I think that's the problem with Xenogears. But with this show, with this game, I mean, it's a lot more straightforward, and it's a really good game, though. I have to say, I really like the story, but I'm starting to feel a little bit more and more inspired to do side quests in this game.
Okay.
Even more so than I did when I did the review last week or 2 weeks ago or whenever that was.
Okay, cool.
And again, it's, you know, we live in a post Witcher 3 world. What can you say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's gonna affect like anybody's perception, especially if they played The Witcher 3, you know? Like it's a huge deal.
It is. It really is. I mean, The Witcher 3 has really like changed the side quest. And it's funny because there's a lot of games that have come out since and they haven't learned anything from The Witcher 3.
Yeah. That's gonna be very difficult to kind of take a look at. I'm glad that that Horizon Zero Dawn doesn't suffer that much, mainly because like they experimented with a very short kind of like side quest system, and the world isn't as sprawling as The Witcher, let's put it that way, but it's, the world is interesting enough that you do want to kind of explore and do the quests and stuff like that.
Now, I can't say about Horizon Zero Dawn too much because I've only played what I played when I first got it when it came out. But I can say I have played a lot of Zelda, and I have played Final Fantasy 15, and both of them do suffer from that. Not as bad as Xenoblade, though. And the reason I say that is, remember, the quest in Zelda, while they're kind of pointless in a way, some of them are a little imaginative, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And Final Fantasy, there's some story to some of them, like with the cook, remember the cook over by Sid's place? There's some story about him that you learn. I think with Xenoblade, though, the problem is this, you know, and again, remember, Xenoblade is a 2010 game. Yes, it came out in the US in 2012, but it's a 2010 game. So I think it still suffers from that kind of archaic design from back then. I think it would have been more acceptable back in 2010, 2012, but, you know, just saying. And maybe I'm not trying to be unfair. I'm just, you know what, fuck it. I'm not being unfair. I'm just saying, you know, we live in a different age now.
Yes, we absolutely do. So I do want to kind of segue this somewhere else, but you kind of cut me off at the pass and, you know, the transition won't be smooth anymore, because last week we actually asked people if there were any updates to the little hoo-ha that we brought up with regards to Metroid 2 Samus Returns requiring an amiibo in order to unlock a difficulty mode. And we actually got a response from one of our listeners, Lewis. And he basically says that you know, well, first of all, he says, I liked Anthony's reaction on the fusion mode controversy, lol. Nintendo actually tried to address it, but failed. Hard mode is actually unlocked by beating the game. Unfortunately, there is a more difficult mode called fusion mode that requires an amiibo unlock, which also gives you, like, the, I guess, the fusion armor that Samus had in Metroid Fusion, I guess.
No.
But, and in his opinion, he says, I may like amiibo, but this is even stupid, in my opinion.
I agree. I still think it's fucking stupid.
Yeah. So basically now, like, a more difficult mode is actually, like, locked behind an amiibo. So it's not necessarily hard mode. So it's almost like they clarified it just so people wouldn't get pissed off that hard mode is locked, but fusion mode is locked.
It's still it's stupid.
Yeah.
Look, do I really need to say anything that wasn't said last week?
I don't think so. It's just that I feel like you've expressed your anger enough, but I feel like I want to redirect that anger towards something else brand new. And you're going to really, really be pissed off with this one.
Okay, let's do this.
I feel like this is a recurring segment called Let's Piss Off Anthony Fernandez.
Oh, I love it, though. I love it. You know I like it, though.
I know, and I kind of, you know, get... I get a little bit of a kick seeing your reaction and stuff, because, you know, you don't check a lot of news in games, and I do, and it's kind of interesting, like, getting you riled up sometimes.
Well, let's do it every week. Bring it. If you can find something piss me off, bring it. Bring it, motherfucker. I'm happy. Bring it.
Okay. This one is pretty new. So you and I have experience with loot boxes in multiplayer games, right? Like Overwatch had a pretty good loot box where you could get it yourself, right? Like, you know, which is pretty cool. Or if you want to generously kind of give your money to Blizzard, you can pay for loot boxes. Same with Lawbreakers, which, you know, we'll talk about later.
Ugh.
How do you feel if a single player game has it? Now, we're talking about not just cosmetic, but progression equipment as well. Like let's say there's this really good piece of armor that you can only get with, like, the best stats and all that stuff in a loot box. Like, let's say you could actually use the game itself to collect the loot box by, I don't know, collecting some sort of currency in the game or pay for it using real money. Okay.
Stop. You're pissing me off already. There's randomization done right with, you know, rare armors being rare, random. Like Diablo, which has always done it right.
Yes.
And then there's crap like this.
Yeah, so the news is that the latest Shadow of Mordor actually has this in the game when it comes out in the fall. Yes.
Oh, for fuck's sakes. And then, of course, EA will monetize it in some fucking way.
This is Warner Brothers, the same publishers of, Injustice 2.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
I thought EA had the Lord of the Rings licensed.
No, not back in the PS2 and PS3 era. Not anymore.
They did with Shadow of Mordor.
No, that's Warner Brothers.
Is that? I thought that was EA.
No, not at all.
Well, whoever's doing it's fucking stupid.
Yeah, it's Warner Brothers, my friend.
Warner Brothers, I don't hate. They do pretty good things. They handle certain games better than others. No, we know they can't handle PC games.
Yeah, so there's that. That's true.
But fuck, why? Is this the only way to get weapons and armor?
No. Like they said, like you can earn these loot boxes. I don't know what they're actually called, but another way to earn loot boxes is to kind of grind for like a currency that you can use to turn these in, and you know, and get them. Like, basically, like, it's like Overwatch, but it's, you know, and I don't know if, let me check one thing, because if I remember correctly, not only does, like, Shadow of Mordor have this loot box system, but I think they also have a season pass as well. So, it's like, how greedy can you be that you're actually fucking charging, like, money to play the game, get a fucking loot box, and oh my god, it's just... It kind of really pisses me off.
It does. It's look, when we just talked about balance in single player games, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about, we know how to get Knights of the Round. Let's fucking earn it, right?
Right.
Why can't you just use that model?
I don't know.
It's a tried and true model that is still used today. I mean, I could name pretty much every game that I've played in the last 6 months has some sort of model where you have to earn your OP stuff, right?
Right.
Breath of the Wild, I know you have to earn the OP stuff. Fucking Horizon Zero Dawn, I'm sure there's some OP weapon. You could tell me more about that than I could tell you. You know, Persona 5.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to earn the most powerful Justice Persona that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just stupid. This loop looks fine in Overwatch. Okay, that's why I never complained about it.
Sure.
And it kind of, when you play Overwatch, you're like, yay, you know, let's see what's in my loot fucking box. I'm kind of excited for that shit.
Mm-hmm.
And this, it's like, oh, am I going to get the pair of boots I desperately need? No, that's not fun.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how it really works, right? But the fact that there are still some stuff, progression stuff, that you can actually get by not playing through the game is kind of underhanded, you know? And I just looked, they have, like, editions of the game that cost all the way up to, like, $300. And they do have story expansions, but I don't see, like, a season pass at all anywhere. But, you know, they have, like, a $100 pack for the game, and they have, like, a $300 pack, you know? And mind you, again, it's in addition to the loot box shit that you may not get. So, yeah, that's the latest in how, you know, game developers and publishers are trying to fuck with us, you know? So I think this is a publisher thing, though. So
I think Injustice 2 was done okay for the most part.
I mean, doesn't that have like a loot box kind of thing too anyway?
It does for the equipment, but you don't need the equipment, though, necessarily.
Mm.
That's the thing. Like the equipment system, yeah, you play it, but you don't need it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And there's always little events. For example, when Wonder Woman, the film came out a couple months back, right? They had that Wonder Woman event where if you did that event for that week, you could get it. But, and remember, this is just Wonder Woman movie armor for you to look like the movie Wonder Woman. But if you miss the event, there's a chance that you can get it through a loot box.
I see.
But that's not a big deal because there's other pieces of armor that might be better that you'll get. And usually when I play, what I found is when you say you play a lot with Wonder Woman, you'll get more Wonder Woman items.
Mm-hmm.
Than you would other characters. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So there's that. So I think Injustice 2 does it right. And again, Injustice 2 isn't necessarily a single player game.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, the loot box system is pretty good. And you don't really have to buy loot boxes. All the boxes, you get loot boxes, like they just throw them at you. They literally do in that game.
I personally think that loot box, it should just be loot box or bust. Like, make it available or have a season pass. Like, don't have both. Because I know why, I mean, I understand why Overwatch and Lawbreakers apply it, right? Because they're not charging for the new content. So this is like another way for them to get extra money, right?
Right.
But companies that are basically not only charging you a season pass for new characters, for example, and new stages, but also now they're like, well, you know, if you want some really nice fucking gear, well, check it out. Like, we got loot boxes for you. It's like, this is the wrong way to implement loot boxes.
Right.
This isn't why this worked for Blizzard and, you know, and Bosky. This isn't why loot boxes are so popular. You know, like, you can't fucking nickel and dime everybody, you know, especially their kindness. You know what I'm saying? Like the loot box should just be the loot box. It can't be accompanied by any other monetizing bullshit out there.
Right, and that's the thing, because that's the thing about Injustice 2. I think if it was heavily monetized with real money, it would be a problem. You can buy loot boxes, but you can buy them with only in-game currency that you get a lot of. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, but it's still really, like, I feel like the reaction to, you know, to Shadow of War having the loot boxes And mm-hmm. and probably, like, you know, probably the publishers thought, like, well, it worked for Injustice 2. Let's fucking put them in, like, you know, like, in the next Middle-Earth Shadow of War game. You know?
But I don't...
I feel like that's a reaction to it.
It works for Injustice, but I don't think it works for a game of that nature.
Even though you say, like, that it's easy to get, like, a currency to basically get those things in Injustice, I would argue that they shouldn't even have it. Because they're already charging you for a fucking season pass. Now you have this stupid RNG for costumes, your part or parts or whatever. Like, you know, they put it there, and it's just really, really dumb. Like, if I want the costumes, let me fucking buy it at the store. Don't make me fucking, like, you know, go through, like, a billion different things in order to get it. And charge me a season pass to get the fucking character so I can try to get their costumes. You know?
All right. I don't think you... Let me explain a little bit about costumes and equipment pieces for Injustice 2, because I need to clarify that for you, okay?
Okay.
For costumes, there are a lot of alternate costumes for the characters. For example, there is... for Flash, right? There's Reverse Flash and then the original 40s Jay Garrick Flash, right?
Sure.
You don't unlock that through source boxes. You unlock that with source crystals, which you earn, and that's either easy to get. But you unlock those by buying them through the through the customization screen. They're not random, so you know when you'll get those.
Okay.
Those are costumes, and now, like, they just released Bizarro Superman, right?
Okay.
And you buy those with source crystals. Those are costumes. Power Girl. Alternate, you know, because what they're doing, I noticed, is they're releasing a lot of other DC characters, but they're using them as skins for existing characters, is cool.
And I get that part.
Yeah.
But if your marketing thing is basically like, yeah, you know, like, make your character look unique, but you still have to go through, like, a bullshit loot box system, it's like...
No. I need to clarify that as well. You get the loot boxes, right?
Sure.
But every time you finish a battle, and that's what I was explaining, say you play a lot like I do. I use Wonder Woman a lot, right?
Okay.
When you fight battles, particularly in the multiverse, you get a ton of Wonder Woman costumes through each. You get like three
costumes three pieces, or like, not, you know, parts.
Three pieces of three parts, like every battle you fight. And sometimes, you know, you'll fight like four or five. So I'll come in there with pretty much whole costume sets. After doing multiverse.
Okay.
But say you decide to use, say, Starfire, right? She just came out.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get a ton of Starfire pieces if you replay those parts for Starfire. You just won't get the Wonder Woman. Then you get loot boxes. And the loot boxes are in addition to what you get. And loot boxes contain parts for everyone. Does that make sense?
So basically, like, what you're saying is that there are parts that are available that don't need, like, loot boxes, basically.
Right. All parts. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So if you use Wonder Woman a lot in Multiverse, which is the single player mode, you'll get a lot of Wonder Woman parts. And if you beat the arcade mode, you'll get a lot of unique stuff from beating the arcade mode on different difficulties.
Here's the thing. And I feel like, you know, I feel like this is a step in the wrong direction, that because a lot of people bought these games, mm-hmm. we're kind of giving the okay for Warner Brothers to completely screw us over in the next iteration of all their games. Because I think that, you know, I understand that there are some things that you can get for free in the game, and then some that you have to loot box and stuff. That's totally fine. The fact of the matter is, there is a randomized element there for gear that you know, that maybe is pretty good, right? Like what's to say that their next mm-hmm. game, that everything is just in a loot box, and you just have to randomize it?
Well, that's a problem. I'm defending Injustice 2 because it's Injustice 2, and I feel it doesn't do it to an extreme where it makes it arbitrary. But your example of them possibly doing that is bullshit. I agree with you. What I'm saying is, I'm going to defend Injustice 2 for what it is because I feel it needs to. But what you're saying this new Lord of the Rings game does, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or if they do nothing but loot boxes for other games for pieces that you need, say Mortal Kombat. The next Mortal Kombat, just example, comes with an equipment system again, too, like Injustice 2 did, right?
Right.
But the only way to get those equipment pieces is not necessarily fighting through battles. It's through... How can you put it? It's through loot boxes only. That's a problem.
Mm-hmm. And charging you season pass in addition to that, by the way.
Right.
Because really, that's my problem here. Like, I normally, I wouldn't have a problem with the loot box idea, right? Like, if it's just the loot box. But if it's a loot box in addition to a season pass, you're a fucking greedy motherfucker. Like, to be, like, what's happening in, like, Shadow of War. Because why are there $99 and $299 editions of a game, which, you know, and have loot box? Like, that doesn't make any fucking sense.
It does not make sense. It doesn't make sense, and I agree with you on that. Like,
yeah, I'm just saying that this is a bad precedent. And mind you, the same company has done it twice, two different ways, but they've done it twice.
And I will argue with you that I think Injustice 2 has done it right. But I do understand your concern, though, moving on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because again, you know, this is, you know, by paying with your money, you are actually saying that it's okay to do this. You know what I'm saying? Like, now, you didn't know when you got it, probably. More than likely, right?
Right.
But this is a bad precedent. This really is truly fucking bad. Like, this is worse than the horse armor.
I think it's bad because, let's put it this way. If you have to buy the season pass, then pay real money for loot boxes, I think that's bullshit, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's bullshit. And, you know, like, that's why I don't give Injustice 2, because you don't have to buy the loot boxes. You don't even have to buy them. You'll get them in addition to completing multiverse events to the predetermined armor you get already. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's all right, because you're getting tons of shit as it is. But I feel that your point is if you buy a season pass for, like, extra story modes and shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to pay for loot boxes.
Yes.
That's bullshit. I think that's bullshit. I think there's a right way to do it, and I think there's a wrong way to do it. And this Lord of the Rings thing is a bullshit way if they're going to do it that way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and, you know, let's not forget as well, like, that this isn't the first time that NetherRealms kind of tried to nickel and dime people. Right?
Right.
You remember Easy Fatalities in Mortal Kombat X, where you have to pay, like, what, like, $1 for an Easy Fatality?
Oh, that was stupid.
Right? Like, I'm just saying, like, that. Those are, you know, this is, you know, like, maybe it's not the developer who's asking for this.
That's what I was going to tell you.
Yeah, maybe this is the publisher, but we'll never know, because this is under the guise of the same company, you know? Like, and again, this is pretty fucking greedy as shit. Like, imagine if the next Batman game, you know, like, maybe, you know, like, a new Arkham game, or maybe the Justice League game that maybe Rocksteady is making has, like, fucking loot boxes up the wazoo, right, and a season pass. Like, man, this is a bad, what we're saying is this is a bad precedent, people. Like, just be aware of this.
Well, we both own Arkham Knight, right? You and I do. We both own that game.
Yeah.
And I own the season pass for it. And I'll be honest, I was really satisfied with that season pass. And I didn't have to buy anything extra. I got every fucking, and I double checked. I have checked. I got every piece of content, every Batman costume, every little, you know, what's that mode called where you just fight people? Mm-hmm. You know, the challenge, that, sure. Oh, every challenge modes, every character costume, every car, every additional story mode. I got fucking everything, dude, from that season pass.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why that game is 71 gigs.
Yeah.
So they did do it right 2 years ago. Let's also say they did it right with The Witcher 3. And I think that was more CD Projekt than Warner Brothers.
Yeah, Warner Brothers just published a game here. And this is, you know, as far as The Witcher 3, that's just CD Projekt Red's prerogative. Like, Warner Brothers didn't have shit to do with that one.
Yeah. And CD Projekt Red, with their handling of GOG and previous games in the Witcher series, they have always, I think, been one of the few developers that have handled DLC great, consistently for the last decade or so.
Right.
They've always done it right. So
yeah, it's too bad that Gwent the card game isn't doing pretty well, I guess, in the whole card game spectrum. But oh well.
Not surprised, because that game's...
There's too many card games out.
I think so.
Like, even Valve, you know, like, if you guys haven't watched the week this week, like, you know, on Monday we actually released a brand new video series tentatively titled Trailer Brawl. I'll have to check with you if we want to stick with that name like, or anything like that. But like, we, you know, I kind of showed Anthony like that, you know, like Valve is making a game, but it's not the game that people wanted. It's a fucking Dota card game. What the fuck?
Yeah, I'm done with that.
Yeah.
Speaking of card games, I don't know. I follow, you know, I'm a big tabletop game enthusiast. Mm-hmm. And this is a perfect time to bring this up. But have you heard there's been a big new hit in the table, in the trading card scene?
No.
And I'm bringing this up. There's been a new game that has been a new hit. And it's, you know, not necessarily giving the big three, Pokemon, Magic the Gathering, or Yu-Gi-Oh!, a run mm-hmm. for her money, but a lot of people are predicting it's going to be the fourth game to kind of stick around, because the problem with trading card games is they come and go, right? But this one has been proved a massive hit, and you won't believe what it is, and I want to try it just because of what it is.
Don't tell me it's like some Fallout thing.
No. Something we like. One of our favorite video game series, Final Fantasy.
It's not Triple Triad, is it?
No. It's a Final Fantasy trading card game.
That's weird.
But it's a big hit, and they've been releasing packs of cards. There's starter sets, and I think the first few sets were 7, 8, and 10, and now they're doing a 13, what was a Type 0 and Final Fantasy 14 sets coming out, expansions based on those. So
that's
each,
weird, man.
But it's supposed to be a really good game, and I'm excited to try it out. So
are you?
Hopefully here, I'm gonna buy some packs and buy a few packs with a few of the starter decks so I could play a few friends and see how it goes.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, I you know, it's a big hit in the trading card game scene.
Nice.
Yeah, it's not Triple Triad, so don't worry.
Okay, speaking of Final Fantasy, this allows me to get a fucking transition in. Yes.
Yay!
I have been obsessively, and I don't take this word lightly, obsessively playing Final Fantasy XII, the Zodiac Age, to the point where I have stayed up until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning for 2 nights straight playing this game. It's kind of crazy if you think about it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And, you know, like, it's, you know, in case, you know, you guys forgot, like, Zodiac Age is kind of like the revamped and re-enhanced version of 12, and, you know, 12 Zodiac, you know, International Zodiac Edition. Now, you're probably wondering, like, why the fuck is it different from the International Zodiac Edition if we just basically played that game? Well, in the original, so first of all, let's backtrack. In the original, there was just one big license board, and you can get everything and all that stuff. You know, like, your progress is basically just, you know, wherever the fuck you go, right? In the International Zodiac job system, they basically added jobs and several different license boards. So it's almost like a variation of the X2 sphere grids, except that they're more specific to a specific class or job. The problem is, and the difference is, that you can only get one job per character, which kind of meant that, you know, like, if you said, like, oh, this person's a white mage, and then they leave the party, you're kind of fucked if you don't have any other backups, which, again, in a way, imbalance the game, right? But when they actually, like, you know, created this version of the game, they said, like, well, why don't we allow people to have a second job on top of the main job that they have once they reach a certain threshold in the game? So that's exactly what they did. So what's interesting about it is that now there's a little bit more flexibility in terms of, like, how your characters behave and attack, and, you know, and the level of customization is actually rather interesting. Like, Pinello, like, one of my characters, is the main white mage of the party, but she also is a monk, so she can actually use staves, and you know, from a story standpoint, it makes sense that she could use staves as actual weapons, and so she actually deals a lot of really good physical damage, and of course is able to heal the party as well if needed. You know, the gambit system is still here, you know, and before people complain about it, it's a lot easier to get things that you need now than before, because if you remember, in the original 12 that we got here, there are many gambits that they basically, like, make, you know, like, that you can't get until later half of the game, which makes them useless, right? Like,
yeah,
like, so they basically made it so that you can actually get it within the first couple hours of the game. You just need some currency. And, you know, While, yeah, I hear you and a lot of people's complaints that you still have to buy the licenses for the weapons and the armor and stuff like that. But to me, like, because of the way that they structured the license boards, it actually makes a lot more sense now. And in a way, you know, technically you don't even have to do, you know, like it feels more organic, I guess is what I'm saying, that when you get the gear, because now they're on the way of, like, maybe, like, if you're a physical attacker, well, the physical attack stuff is on the other side of all the armor, so there's that. Or you can go around it. You can basically go about it in very different ways. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is that, you know, like, I know we kind of, you know, lashed out on 12 a lot recently.
Oh, yeah, I know I have.
Yeah, but, you know, it's kind of interesting because playing this again kind of made me realize, like, well, maybe some of our complaints aren't actually warranted.
Maybe they fixed the complaints in this new version of the game.
Well, it's funny because, like, one of the complaints that we had was that there wasn't much of a character development. But playing through the game, like, there's actually a lot of character development in the game. Like, yes, Pinello and Vaughn have no character development whatsoever, but the rest of the cast actually have a pretty decent amount. And, gotcha. You know, and the political story that they tell, right? Like, you know, because this is Yasumi Matsuno's work. It's got to have some sort of politics in it, right? Like, it's so kind of there. And man, I was, like, in a part of the game where there was, like, a big twist that happened, and I was actually pretty shocked because I completely forgot that part of the game, and I was like, holy shit, like, I can't believe that fucking happened and he's getting away with it, you know? Like, I was like really fucking shocked about what happened. And mind you, this is a game from, like, what, like 2006, and it's interesting, like, kind of coming back to it. It's like it feels like a comfortable game, and it's actually very relaxing sometimes, you know, because, you know, if you've got a really good gambit system, like, you know, set up for all your characters, you're characters can be a fucking machine and ripping through, like, swaths of enemies, and you're leveling up and gaining, like, license points. And here's another thing. Because of the fast forward button, it makes the grinding a lot more bearable, because that way you just basically, like, literally go through swaths of enemies with the fast forward, and battles last, like, a few seconds. And I think that alone is a great way to kind of balance the game. Now, yes, if you play it without the fast forward, it's going to be boring as shit. But my God, that is a huge change. Just that one fucking button.
Well, we'll see when I get it in a couple weeks, so.
Oh, you are getting it.
I should be, yeah.
Okay. But yeah, like I said, like, I don't know why. Like, I seem to be super enthralled by this again. And I've stayed, like I said, like, I've stayed up till, like, 3 or 4 in the morning, and until the sun comes up, I'm like, okay, I need to sleep now. it's kind of crazy. but to the merit of the game, though, like, I feel like even though this does things a little bit different than most Final Fantasies, the actual equipment system is super deep. Probably deeper than most Final Fantasies since 6. Because this isn't just, like, one piece of armor that, oh yeah, you just equip, like, a bracelet and now you're protected against, like, a billion different things, right? Like, it's like you have a headpiece, you got, like, a chest piece, you know what I'm saying? Like, that old school equipment mentality. And I'm such a purist that I love that shit, right? Like, and I think that that's, you know, even though it takes me a little bit more time to get my characters kitted up, I appreciate that they're so fucking hardcore that they're sticking to that, that, you know, like, that's why I'm enjoying it again, because I haven't played, like, an RPG that takes me back to that era of Final Fantasy, you know, where things are, like, you have to buy, like, the helmet and the chest piece, and now you have to buy, like, the accessories that negate, like, certain status ailments. It's like, ooh, like, man, you know, you get what I'm saying, though?
Yeah, I get it.
It's a good balance of classic Final Fantasy and new stuff, you know, so... I don't know. That's my thing.
Well, I'll have to give it a try. I don't have much to add because I have not played this game in almost a decade.
Yeah.
So
more than that, right?
Well, let's see. Actually, a decade. I played it in early 2007.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So, yeah, pretty much a decade. So 10 years ago. Fuck, it's 10 years since 07. Go figure.
No kidding.
it'll be our 10-year anniversary, Alex, in a year.
Oh, no. In a year?
Yeah, I met you in 08.
Oh, or a friendship, sure, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I count our friendship really the beginning, not so much the podcast.
Okay.
So, but yeah. Anyway, though, I don't have much to add again. I will try this soon.
Of course. Yeah. And it would be an interesting conversation if you actually get substantially far into your playthrough, you know.
Oh yeah.
So, but I want to hear you talk about, like, you know, Starfire from Injustice. I know we kind of, like, you know, veered in and out of fighting games and game balancing and all this shit, but I am curious about this because, you know, like, again, it's a new character. It's always exciting to get new characters.
Oh yeah, yeah. In this game in particular, because, you know, we've got a lot of them, and there's some big rumors about them. About some of the characters, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now in this fighter pack, we've gotten Red Hood, who I don't care for, and that's not because he's a bad character. I just don't like his play style. I like Sub-Zero though, Alex.
Okay.
I like Sub-Zero, and then of course we got Starfire. Now, being a DC Comics nerd, I can tell you Starfire, you know, is a favorite of mine from the new Teen Titans runs from the 80s. So I like her as a character, right?
Right.
And so that helps. And also, I think she's a very quick and very, like, quick combo heavy character from what I noticed. She's very good at comboing and fast comboing. And she's also good at, what's that word I'm looking for, where you keep the enemy across at bay from you?
Like zone?
Yeah, zoning. She's a very good zoning character, too, which I like.
One thing I noticed with Injustice 2 is that a lot of the characters in that game in general are zoners.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. But they have different styles of zoning. Like, Superman's more of a slower zoner.
Right.
Does that make sense? Starfire's a quicker one. And I'll be honest, Wonder Woman, I don't feel, is a zoner. She's a close impact character, you know what I mean?
Because
okay. That's my main. I main Wonder Woman. And that's probably why I main her, because she wasn't like that in Injustice 1. Shazam was like that.
Right. And of course, and we all know what happened to Shazam in the first game.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Oh, just a story note. They don't use the alternate universe people. Just saying.
That's why.
They use the bad universe Superman ruled. So that's why certain characters aren't in there. Although they had an excuse for the Joker.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's nothing arbitrary, but they only put him in there because a lot of the hipsters like the Joker. I like the Joker, but, you know, some people just like, he's a funny evil clown. But there you go. You know, yeah, that mentality. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, I'm getting into that awkward Anthony asshole territory. Anyway, back to Starfire. She's really like... She has a bunch of combos. She also does a lot of air stuff, too. Like her regular throw, she'll fly you in the air and knock them down. So she does do a lot of air stuff as well.
Okay.
So she's a really, like, really quick kind of zoning anti-air character. But, you know, she's not good at close impact. But I still like her a lot.
I see.
So she's still pretty good. And that gets me excited because in September, we'll start, hopefully they'll reveal Fighter Pack 2.
Okay, cool.
Because remember, they announced the fighter packs at a time, so.
Mm-hmm.
God, I want to know.
Speaking of which, speaking of new fighters, did you ever buy, like, the Season 2 for Street Fighter V?
Yes, I did.
I was going to ask, like, have you tried Abigail yet?
No, oh, shit, no, I haven't.
Yeah,
because
I think he's been out for, like, about a whole month now.
And I haven't tried Ed.
Oh, shit. Like, I've seen so many people play Ed. Like, he's fucking cool, man.
Okay, so you know what? That's my homework for next week.
Okay.
Because I have the season pass for Street Fighter V, and I'll probably get another season pass, so.
I have a feeling, like, I don't know how your play style is in Street Fighter V, but you might like Eddie. Or Ed. Is it Ed or Eddie?
Ed, I think.
Okay, yeah, you might like Ed.
You know, fighting games are the only ones I want to buy season pass. I also want to get the Tekken 5 season pass.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
Okay. So let me ask. Do you get new characters with that season pass?
Yes.
Okay.
You get a lot. You get everything. You get the new stages. You get the new fighters. And you get the new equipment, that you can unlock in customization mode.
Ah, I see.
So you get everything in that season pass.
Nice.
And I think, you know, with Street Fighter V, I will be honest, that's one that doesn't do the season pass right.
Mm-hmm.
Because they'll give you some costumes, but you don't get all the costumes they release, and you don't get all the stages. I don't like that.
I see.
I think Street Fighter V Capcom needs to learn. I think the one that's handling it the best is probably Namco Bandai.
Okay.
Namco Bandai is handling it the best. I don't think NetherRealm has done a bad job with Injustice 2 so far, but we'll see. I'm still, you know, because they didn't, I'll be honest, I agree, they didn't handle MKX well.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll give them a little leg room and see where Injustice 2 is in the next 6 months or so.
Sure.
But they're handling it that better. I think as much as I like Street Fighter V, I will defend that game. I will say they're not handling DLC or Season Pass the best.
Right.
So
at least they have like two seasonal season passes, right? Like right. At least there's some sort of consistency with what they're doing, you know. With regards to Tekken, though, I think they're doing a really good job with that game in general. Like, there've been many times where I've been tempted to get that game, but I keep pulling myself back, saying like, "You're never gonna play that game." Who are you kidding?
Well, if you get it, I'll make you play it so we could do an episode. That's a reason to get it. You'll play it a couple times with me. I'll show you my Asuka and kick your ass. So yeah, there you go.
We'll see if that'll be true. Have you actually beaten me in a fighting game?
I've only played you at MKX. No, MK1, and you beat me bad.
I played you in MK9. I think I played you in Street Fighter V.
We were even in Street Fighter V.
Yeah, we did. Like, I remember that because we played with one of our listeners.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
And you and I were even in that game. You know what, though? I'll be honest. I am better at 3D fighters, I think, than I am at 2D fighters. I know that.
Okay.
Because I can get really, I'm really, like, highly ranked in DOA 5, and I'm getting really high ranked in Tekken 7.
Speaking of which, you just reminded me.
Oh.
Of Dead or Alive.
What's up with Dead?
Okay, so you probably haven't heard, but it's getting a new season pass.
Not surprised.
Wow, that's quite an evenly tempered reaction for coming from you about that game.
I love that game, though. I like that game. Its season passes, though, are ridiculously high. They're like $99. So
yeah, this is the 7th season pass that they're going to be releasing, apparently.
But that's why, like, my approach to that game is a little different. I buy costumes for characters I use. Like, I'm not going to buy a costume for Tina. I never use Tina.
Mm-hmm.
But for Kazumi, that's my main. Kazumi, I'm going to buy costumes for her. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Or Hitomi. I use Hitomi as well. So that's just my logic in that. I mean, you know, why would I buy costumes for characters I don't use it with the way they have it set up?
Right.
So there's that.
Okay. So all right, well, that's cool about Starfighter. Like, that seems like a really fun character to use. I'm anxious to see people play her in tournaments, because I you know, I love watching tournament battles and stuff. Like, most recently, I think it was this past weekend, somebody actually had a double slow-mo replay, like, in Tekken 7, which is kind of insane. So yeah, that's something to think about.
I kind of want to bust out some Tekken 7.
Tekken 7 is really... I think Tekken 7, out of all the fighting games that came out this year, is really fucking good. Like, I think it really is, like, the best game, the best fighting game of this year. Yes, Injustice 2 has some really cool stuff, but Tekken 7 is the only one that I turned around and be like, whoa, wait a second,
honest, I think both are equally good for different reasons, and I like both. And if you let me tell you this, let's fast forward to November, right?
Okay.
Say both games drop to $20, right? Both games.
Mm-hmm.
Buy both of them. I think you would be happy with both of them.
Yeah. Well, in that situation, I'd probably buy only one. And it'll probably be Tekken 7 if that were the case.
That's fine, but I'm saying if they drop that low, get them both.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. Like, the reason why I would take Tekken 7 over Injustice at that price, because guess what's going to happen in Injustice 2 next year?
Possibly another season pass.
No, well, not just that, but they're going to pack in, like, the first DLC and call it something else.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. That's a good point. Never mind. I didn't think of
that. There you go.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good point. But yeah, with Tekken, I'd get it.
Yeah.
And Tekken's good time, so.
Yeah, I mean, at most, I think it'll drop to is like $30. I've seen it drop to down to 40 and even 47 lately. Like, you know, we're talking about outside of Amazon.com, by the way. Like, you know, but, you know, like, it's kind of like that.
Dude, I'll guarantee you both of those games will be on the winter sales at the latest.
But that's what I'm saying. It'll be like $30 or some shit like that.
Yeah. They'll both be there.
Right.
But yeah, so I don't know. It's a really good. Let's just one thing, though, like, you know, I can say is those two games just add to how fucking awesome this year has been.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I know we keep saying it, but it just keeps getting better and better.
Because you know why we keep bringing it up is because, you know, these years don't come often. Right.
No.
Like years like this, where it's like people are like all developers and publishers are firing on all cylinders. This doesn't come out often.
No, it does not.
And that's the thing. It's like, you know, that's why we gloat so much of this year is because, yeah, this is a really good year for games.
Might be the best.
The best in this gen so far.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah. Hell yeah. This is why this year is probably like last year was okay. And I still have felt for the longest time this gen is better than last gen. I'll argue that. I'll fight you to the death on that. That's just a fact, in my opinion. But this year has fully cemented that this eighth gen has fucking kicked the shit out of the disappointing seventh gen. So
it is true. Like, it's kind of funny because I go back to the PS3 from time to time, and none of the games really inspire me. Like, I mean, obviously, we had some great games, right? I'm not going to say, like, though that generation is terrible, but, like, we had, like, you know, the Uncharted series, we got the Bioshock series, but none of them really kind of inspired me to be like, yeah, I want to fucking play more video games, you know? Like,
yeah.
But this gen, like, has just been like, oh, fuck yeah, I'm going to play more video games. Fuck yeah, let's do it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
On all aspects, whether it's a AAA title or something like a Persona 5 or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's just this year's kick ass.
So. Exactly. So I'm going to veer off to, you know, to a different territory, a territory filled with murder and dilemmas and time. This is a terrible transition. I'm talking about Zero Time Dilemma because we actually beat it last week.
So, yeah, you talked about it last week.
Yeah, so Zero Time. Well, I want to say I talked about Virtue's Last Reward last week, but not Zero Time Dilemma. But, you know, Zero Time Dilemma, like, we actually beat. It's a bit shorter than Virtue's Last Reward in terms of story, but my God, is the presentation so much better. Like, you know, when you look at the first two games of the series, which is 9 Hours, 9 Persons, 9 Doors, and Virtue's Last Reward, then you play Zero Time Dilemma, you're going to be like, this is the same fucking game from the same people? Like, and the answer is kind of, because the director is the same, and some of the principal staff's the same, but the developer is actually completely different. It's being made by somebody else, but it's because of that it feels like a solid title. Like, the animations are a lot better, the character models are just fantastic, you know, like, the storytelling has, you know, improved tremendously. The writing has kind of suffered much, though, and the reason why I say that is because it's a different localization person than the previous two games, you know.
Yeah,
like, so yep. So, you know, kind of from a feeling standpoint, like dialogue standpoint, it feels different. That being said, they got all the voice actors from the previous two games reprising some of their roles, right? And, you know, like, because of course there's always returning people, but what I'm trying to say here is that it's a great cap to the entire series. Now, there'll still be questions that, you know, are debatable, you know, throughout the whole series, but for me, like, even playing this on the Vita, like, it's a solid package. I actually, you know, thoroughly enjoyed my time with this. Like, it's kind of crazy that, you know, like, to think that, you know, a such a cerebral game, you know, with strong, you know, with okay storytelling, I guess, because of the dialogue, like, that the presentation goes a long way, right? Like, in most visual novel games, if you know, like, Anthony, you probably can attest to this, right. Like, you know, like, they usually have, like, a choice on screen, and they don't make a big deal out of it, right? Because they'll just be menu items to pop up in front of you, you know, like, during the visual novel part, right? Mm-hmm. But in Zero Time Dilemma, they make such a big deal out of it. They even have, like a special menu that says, like, decision time or whatever the fuck. Like,
right.
The whole screen turns red, and you're like, what the fuck? Like, it's such a small thing to do in terms of UI, but it really enhances, like, the whole importance of that part. Like, there's this one challenge that I had to do where it literally is, like, you had 10 seconds to decide whether you have to push a button or not. And that button might actually, like, cost you your life, you know, and because it's the Vita, you can actually, like, use your touchpad to kind of press that button or not. So it's almost like this heightened sense of suspense, you know what I mean? So,
right.
So that's kind of, like, one of the things that I really enjoyed. But overall, like, you know, all the shortcomings that I set aside, and I don't really want to get into it because, again, Zero Time Dilemma is one of those games where you have to play the rest of the games in a series. Don't be fooled. You have to play the other games in a series.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually going to give this one a 5.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. And the PS4 version is coming out next month. It's going to be so good.
I'll probably get the PS4 version of the other two, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
But let's talk about something you brought up real quick.
Okay.
I hear a lot of reviewers say that Japanese games have bad rap. And mm-hmm. that's a very, 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 very difficult thing to bring up. You know why? The localization. Because it ultimately comes down to how well the localization is done.
Right.
You know, remember, when you do localization, it's not a simple... A lot of people, and I think a lot of video game reviewers have this stupid notion of it just being, oh, they just straight up translate it and fix it a little bit. No.
Right.
You know, I will tell you this. Being, you know, going to my literary knowledge, I can tell you that there are well-written versions of the Odyssey and there are shitty-written versions of the Odyssey, of Homer's The Odyssey. And what some people be like, what? They're the same author. No, not necessarily. Because you have to understand, it's written in an ancient form of Greek, right? Mm-hmm. Then it has to be translated to modern Greek, then to English.
Right.
So even at that, when it's translated from ancient Greek to modern Greek to English, there's going to be some changes from each version. And even at that, you know, the Greek translation is different from the ancient translation. The point I'm making is there's going to be versions of the Odyssey that are well written because the translator knows how to play with English words better than someone else who may just know how to translate, but they're not a writer. They're just a translator. But and that's true.
No, go ahead. Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. I want to hear. What do you got to say?
It's like an advanced form of telephone. You know, like, right. as you pass along the message is going to morph and, you know, and shape itself depending on how you interpret it, right? Like, and so, like, for me, like, I feel like direct translation, you know, like, or rather a localization straight from the source material and not through an intermediary. Like, because you mentioned, like, oh, yeah, the ancient Greek to, like, modern Greek. Like, what if somebody actually made, like, an English version based off of the ancient Greek, you know, while preserving the intent of the ancient Greek, you know, because
right. You
don't like, I feel like, you know, in order for you to kind of be able to do proper localization work or translation work, if you will, you have to kind of carry over that, you know, the meaning of the text, right? Like, why did they choose this word as opposed to this word? You know what I'm saying? Like, because that means something different in English, right? I mean, it's not as simple as, like, oh, they're just straight up translating.
Right.
And if you want to, and for the people out there who are listening, if you guys are actually interested in, you know, talking about, like, how, you know, the, like, the different challenges of localization work, I actually interviewed a couple of the localization people from The House in Fata Morgana, which is a great visual novel, by the way. And you guys should check it out. And, of course, any of the previous episodes of this podcast on mybacklogbattle.tv. So, go check it out. It's a really good interview with them, and we talk about, like, their localization workflow, how they actually take, you know, like, localization, like, you know, like, how do they do it and stuff. It's a really fascinating read.
Not only at that, but if you read, like, look at working designs real quick. I'll bring them up for a second. Kind of add to your point, Alex. Some people don't like working design translations. You know why, Alex?
Mm.
Because if you look at a lot of the working design translations, a lot of them have American pop culture references from that time. And they didn't feel out of place to me, you know, because these are in strange fantasy worlds anyway, right? If you look at Lunar Silver Star Story Complete, not the PSP remake, but that version.
Right.
I never felt the American references hurt the story. I felt it told the story that it meant to tell very well. And I even got more evidence of that after playing the PSP version, which has a different translation, but kept some of the working design quirks in it to a degree, but still a different translation. And that's one where you know the game's story intent is still the same.
Right.
But the opposite can happen, where you have a bad translation, i.e. Final Fantasy Tactics, and then you have a good translation. And when I played the good translation, the PSP version, War of the Lions, the story made more sense. You know what I mean?
I see.
So there's examples of that already. And I think with your point with, you know, that interview, which I read, it's great. You get really a great understanding of how much work goes into translation. Mm-hmm. It's really, I'll be honest. I'm a writer. I'm going for creative writing. I think translating a work is probably more difficult than writing your own story.
Yeah.
I honestly believe that.
I think so too, because it's you're trying to get into somebody else's brain, you know, and oftentimes you might not have a direct line to talk to that person, right? Like sometimes, like when localization teams happen, they may or may not have access to that same person because maybe they're working on a new project, right? The one thing that was really cool about Virtue's Last Reward and 999 was that the localization guy actually worked really closely with the director of the original game and actually mm-hmm. like communicated with him and figured out the intent of some of his dialogue and all that stuff. So it's almost like he really dug deep into figuring out like why certain lines and were delivered the way that they were, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of the best translations are that. And, you know, not only, you know, when they work directly with the director, that's great. And I think that's one reason why the working designs also work. Not only, you know, like a lot of people, again, don't like it for the American references. But Victor Ireland has, I've read in many interviews with almost every game, particularly the game art games, like the Lunar games, Alex. He's worked with the fucking, the directors of the game from Japan.
Right.
And I think that adds a whole level. You can tell when there's a disconnect, though. And I'll be honest, there was a disconnect in some games, you know, like Final Fantasy VII, that PS1 translation. Yeah. You could tell there was a complete disconnect in that. There's a complete disconnect in Final Fantasy Tactics, you know. And even if you look at it, you know, a lot of people forget this, but the original Legend of Zelda had a terrible translation.
Mm-hmm.
That's still released to this day. Read that opening fucking fucking opening. It's like Zelda must go fight and the fight began. And there's shit like that in the translation.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a tough job.
It is. It's a tough job. Yeah. So, again, like if you guys want to check that interview out, it is on mybacklogbattle.tv. And remember that any of these, like, you know, other translations and stuff or other episodes can be found there as well. And a bunch of other, like, really neat stuff, including, like, some of our videos. And again, if you haven't yet, and I know I keep harping on this, because this is really important, go to youtube.com/mybacklogbattle, click that subscribe button so you won't miss out on any of the videos that we're going to be releasing over the next few weeks. It's going to be really awesome. Do you want to talk about anything else? Because I only have one more thing to talk about.
I do too.
Okay,
I do too.
So let's go with yours. What do you want to talk about?
Mega Man Legacy Collection 2.
That's right. Okay. So how is this thing?
I like it, but I think they did some things better in the first one. Like the museum, I think the UI was better in the first one. Yes, I'm talking about a Mega Man game, but the UI menus to get to the motherfucking whatchamacallit, museum was done better.
Okay.
Just stuff like that. There are some things that I haven't gotten to look extensively, and I need to do some research. But one of my biggest things is what I'm really looking for, what I was looking forward to, and I and maybe I was wrongly to, is at least some different versions of Mega Man 8. Because 7, 9, and 10, really, you don't need different versions. But Mega Man 8 is legendary for having several different versions of that game, as you know, right?
Now, did I hear that the Saturn version is the one that's part of this collection?
I don't know if it's a, you know, I don't know if it's the Saturn version yet. I hope it is.
Okay.
If I hope you heard correctly. Because the Saturn version, I like the PS, the PlayStation version, don't get me wrong, okay? I think the PlayStation version is great. I think Mega Man 8 is kind of wrongfully denied by certain people, by Mega Man fans. And I think it's a great game. It has a lot of character and personality to it. But I've always wanted to play the Saturn version because I think, if I remember, I know there's some extra stage elements. And also two classic bosses, Cutman and Woodman, are bosses in it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one element of the game I would like to see. When I did play the little bit of Mega Man 8 I did play, it was the American version, voice acting wise, for sure. I can tell you, I know that atrocious voice acting by heart, Alex. Okay. Dr. Wily, you know, that kind of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping, and I looked for it, but it's not there. I was hoping that maybe they would do dual audio. But they didn't. So
some collection that is.
I know. I wish, unless it's unlockable, but I was hoping they would do dual audio. I mean, that would be worth it.
Hmm.
You know? And I do hope it is the Saturn version. I hope it's the Saturn version. That's what you've heard though, right?
That's what I heard. So I can't really verify it because obviously, like, you know, like other people saying things is, you know, could be wrong, but that's what I heard.
Okay. Now, as you know, I'm really a big fan of 8, and that's probably my main reason for buying it. 7 is also really considered the black sheep of the series. Have you ever played 7?
No.
Me neither. And I think one of the reasons why 7 might be the black sheep of the series is because it was overridden by the X Games.
Right, right, right.
Which, you know, I can tell you the X Games are really solid.
Yeah, I remember that era where they're basically still releasing like mainline Mega Man games, but X was kind of like paralleling it, which was kind of weird, you know? Like, it's like, what's the point? Why is there two of these now?
Well, you know, I can tell you this. One thing that Capcom did right with both the mainline and the X Games is there's a significant difference between the way the X Games are made and the mainline games. For example, the main difference is there are things that Mega Man can do in the X Games that he can't do in the main series, right? Like right. Wall jump, right? And then there's also that element of the armor upgrades. His main armor gets upgraded. That's not in Mega Man. That's not in Mega Man 1. Now, while some people, you know, like if you're new to Mega Man, you might be saying, well, Mega Man X sounds better than the mainline series. I would say they're both equally good because one game has its own set of design elements, right? And the other sure. game series has its set of design elements. The other thing, too, that Mega Man games have, the mainline games have that the X games don't have, at least up to X3, I can recall, is a store. Like 7, 8, and 9, and 10 all have a store that you could go buy shit at. So there's certain mechanics that each game do differently to kind of keep them, give them their own character. But they still feel like Mega Man.
Right.
You know, unlike Mega Man Legends, which you go suck a dick. But, you know, that's all I got to say on that.
Okay. I have no opinion of it. So I think we should be moving on because we're kind of actually going really, really over time here. So,
okay.
I said I was going to talk about Lawbreakers, but I feel like I don't really have a lot to say about Lawbreakers because I only played like maybe a few matches of the of the game, like when it, during its release, and I heard like there were some issues with the servers at launch, which is kind of weird because that, why did we have a beta to begin with? So I'm gonna let that simmer for like another week and then figure it out. But I do want to kind of go back to Splatoon 2 because, you know, I've played enough of the single player. Like I'm at like halfway through the third world of that game and played enough of the multiplayer to kind of actually give it a score. So this is going to be really interesting. So Splatfest happened and, you know, and I'm going to basically like ask you the question that was asked of all the Inklings that were playing Splatoon 2 during this time, Anthony.
What's that?
I can't hear you.
What's that?
Mayo or ketchup?
Ketchup. Fuck mayonnaise.
By the way, yeah. So anyways, Team Mayo won. But not because of a majority vote. So the way that Splatfests work is that you vote for your allegiance, whether you side with Team Mayo or Team Ketchup. I sided with Team Mayo because I love mayo. Fuck ketchup. 26%, I want to say like less than 30% of the population in the United States, Australia, and New Zealand actually voted for Team Ketchup. So, or Team Mayo. Team Ketchup was the majority. So they won that part. But in order to determine which is the strongest condiment, you also have to figure out like the win percentage of solo players and the win percentage of players who teamed up with each other.
Right.
Unfortunately, Team Ketchup lost in both of these other
aspects.
Yeah. So Team Mayo is the strongest condiment, which by the way, Team Mayo has won in all the regions of the world. So let it be known, mayo, the superior condiment. Anyways, so these silly Splatfests only happen in a 24-hour period, and it's triggered in different regions, and they call them Splatfests. So this changes the main Inktopolis Square into kind of like a live rave of what's going on. And so, you know, like, you know how like in the Wii U you could draw like, you know, for the Miiverse and shit like that and all that stuff. Like, they get themed depending on like what side you're on. So like, for example, some, you know, like people in Team Ketchup, like, because they know that it's going to be this, their artwork's going to be displayed in red, like they do silly shit like, you know, like write the word blood there, so you'll have like really weird really weird like signage like on the buildings saying blood in all red letters, and it's kind of creepy almost. And of course, there's the people with Team Mayo, you know, like drawing their own shit. It's kind of like a happening. And, you know, we talked about how some events like really suck where it only happens like once. Like, I feel like it's kind of interesting how they made the Splatfest a really important event. Now, you know, does it suck that it only happens for 24 hours? Absolutely. I wish it lasted for a whole weekend. You know, I don't know about this like 24 hours thing. And so that's kind of like where I kind of struggled with the score a little bit, because on one hand, Splatoon 2 is a fantastic game with super fun things. You know, like, you know, the Salmon Run is a super fun thing. You know, like playing multiplayer is super fun. Okay.
Strip down all the extra modes and go to core mechanics. It's a solid fucking game. Really good game.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Keep going. I just want to clarify that.
And especially like with, you know, with the weapons that they give you, there's certain uses. There's some really bullshit weapons that you will learn to hate just because maybe that's not your playstyle. There's some really good people who play it with, you know, who have really good playstyles with those. But the fact of the matter is, like, and I keep going back to the scheduling, because I understand the multiplayer and why they rotate the different maps and stuff like that. I actually have come to appreciate that with that game. But the 24-hour limitations for Splatfest, which, you know, admittedly, it makes it feel special, so it's okay. But also tied in with the limitations in Salmon Run and the gear that you get there seems to be like a very stifled way of making certain things important in Splatoon 2.
Mm.
Now, let's couple that with the biggest limitation of them all, no voice chat and limited communication. Now, in Salmon Run, you know, like, you have two commands, two communication commands, this way and booyah.
What?
Yeah, that's it. Like, you use the D-pad to trigger these. No,
what,
like,
the fuck?
No, like, you know, and if you turn into, like, you know, into a life preserver, which, you know, will happen if you died in Salmon Run, you could keep mashing those two buttons until your character keeps saying help. You know?
Okay. Let me say something. I've seen limited commands work, but usually they have like 20 commands, not booyah sure, and sure. What's the other
this
one?
This way.
What?
This way could mean anything, right? Like, this way as in, like, hey, there's some eggs, you know, that need to be picked up here this way, or there's a boss this way, we need to kill it. You know what I mean? Like, but there's no command to be like, help me out with this boss, because I'm dying here. So this way could mean five different things, you know, and that's kind of really frustrating if you think about it, you know, and your other command is booyah. What the fuck does booyah mean? You know, other than a goddamn cheer, you know? So again, like, mechanically, like I said, like, it's a great game, but and here's the thing, the voice chat, right? I'm going to talk specifically about the voice chat feature on the Nintendo app on the iPhone. And maybe you have an Android, it applies to that as well. If you put your phone on rest and you have your voice chat on, it turns off the voice chat. You have to have your phone turned on permanently and not actually power save in order to maintain the voice chat.
Something that lots of other programs do, like Facebook video chat or Skype or Discord.
But also, if you leave the Nintendo app, it also turns off the voice chat. So if you want to look up something like, let's say, you know, like how this weapon works or something like that, you're actually closing the voice chat.
And that's fucking stupid.
Yeah. So you cannot absolutely multitask on a device that was built for multitasking. So... So that be also, and here's the thing that really is dumb. And I think that, you know, back several years ago, people who played Battlefield complained that the tick rate, which is, you know, and as a definition, the tick rate is the number of updates a game receives from other players in order to update, you know, the state of the game, right? So basically, like, we have 60 frames per second. If there's 60 ticks, that means that updates 60 times, you know, per second or something like that, right? So meaning higher tick rate means more responsive game, right, Anthony? You get it? Are you following?
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So the tick rate of Splatoon 1 was at, you know, was around 25, you know, for a 60 frames per second game. The tick rate for Splatoon 2 is much lower at 16. What does that mean, though? Like, you're probably thinking, like, what
is
that?
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
What that means is that because it only updates, like, 16 times per second, that means that bullets can basically come at you, like, multiple times in one tick. So maybe you're getting, you know, for here's a good example. For one tick in a 60 tick per second game, you get one bullet per one tick. But if you're only getting 16 per second, you might get 5 or 10 different fucking bullets in one tick. So it's almost like they one-shot you. Like your opponents. Now, yes, this is a bad thing. Does it make things like little lopsided? Yes, absolutely, actually. Now, that wouldn't be a problem necessarily if the game had dedicated servers. But knowing Nintendo, do you think they have dedicated servers?
No, they do not.
No, they do not. And you know what else this game does that we haven't done since the 90s, probably?
What?
Or actually earlier Call of Duty games. Peer-to-peer networking.
What the fuck?
That means, not in a dedicated server, you're sending your information to the dedicated server, and the dedicated server sends all that information outward to the rest of the consoles or PCs, whatever, right? You get that part, right, Anthony?
Yeah. Of course.
In a peer-to-peer server, you are sending information, and it's an eight-player game of Splatoon. Your console is sending information to seven other people.
That is fucking stupid.
Yes. And guess what else, Anthony?
What?
We get to pay for this service next year for $20 a year.
Anyway, on the next episode of Backlog...
But so this is, you know, culminating in this, like, and I hope, like, you know, I painted a clear picture of the challenges that Splatoon 2 has. It is still a fantastic game. The problem is that it is a game mired by many, many technical issues. Now, you're probably wondering, like, where did you get the tick rate? Well, somebody actually, like, you know, posted, you know, information about the tick rate and actually studied it. Okay, like, this isn't just some Joe Schmo, like, theorizing somewhere. They actually used networking tools and figured this shit out. Okay, so this isn't, yeah, you know, this isn't made up. Okay, so I wasn't sure what I was going to give the game, and I labored through it. But because of the game has just so many things, and again, this is being played before we're getting charged for this. Before, I can only give this game a 3 out of 5.
Oh,
it's a great game, but they need to fix a lot of these issues. Give us dedicated servers. If you want us to pay $20 a year, give us dedicated servers. Make Splatoon 2 more legit than it already is, because right now people are randomly disconnected. I'm getting errors, Anthony, where it says, like, oh, your console can't connect to another console. Like, what? Like, that's not supposed to happen in the year 2017.
No.
We're supposed to connect to a goddamn dedicated server, asshole. So, again, Nintendo not understanding how to make online games. And it's a shame, because Splatoon has some really fantastic stuff. It plays really well when it plays well. But it also, you know, punishes you if you have a shitty wireless connection and, you know, all this other stuff too.
Oh,
it's
I'm being
really
punished.
Ridiculous.
I'm going to be punished.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
what a way to end this show, Alex.
Well, we have a question.
Okay, let's end the show with the question.
Yeah, we, you know, because we always have, like, a lot of questions on the back burner. And if you want to send us any questions, comments, or suggestions for anything on this show, please email us at podcast@mybacklogbattle.tv. All right. This email is from Tom, and he asks, how do you explain the success of Friday the 13th, the game? The game has had all sorts of bug issues, and now in a slew of negative press, yet the last time I checked, it has sold over 1.8 million copies. Is it just a desire for a fun horror survival MMO or something with nostalgia attached to it? Like, or what do you guys think?
I think it's the brand partially. Now, mind you, usually brands don't make a video game with a lot of gamers because it just doesn't, right?
Right.
But I think Tom's point too, the nostalgia plus the brand, I think sold a lot of people on this game, I'll be honest. And the idea of it, which is actually brilliant, the idea. But from what I've seen, it's not executed well. Now, what's that other game that does the same thing?
It doesn't do the same thing, but it's called Dead by Daylight.
Okay, it doesn't do exactly the same thing, but it's got a similar idea behind it. And it seems like, you know, I've looked at both games because I am interested in Dead by Daylight. And I can tell you Dead by Daylight looks like the better game. I just think Friday the 13th, though, has that branding behind it.
Gotcha.
Sadly.
Yeah. So my opinion on it is that I don't think Friday the 13th really is a survival game. And this might sound really controversial because it is a survival game, right? Like you're trying to escape from Jason and all that stuff. But the one thing that you can do as well is actually be a traitor and kill your friends. That's one thing that you can do in this game that you can't do in Dead by Daylight. There's, you know, you can help them out or totally screw them over, you know? And because of that simple fact, I feel that it's a party game, not really like, you know, like a game where it's all about survival and stuff. I mean, obviously that's like the crux of it, right? But, you know, it really is just a party game because most of the time you'll probably want to play with your friends and, you know, try to screw them over and stuff like that. So it's almost like a game of betrayal in a way. And that to me, I think is the more interesting part of Friday the 13th. Now, yes, it's really buggy and all that stuff, but think about like what it offers, right? Like, and think about like other games who were buggy that offered something that was never actually like found before, right? Like, let's talk about Skyrim, for example.
Right.
Super buggy, right? But there's no other experience out there like it. You know, like, it is a great example of, like, how the actual experience of the gameplay trumps, you know, the actual execution part of it. And I feel like that's exactly what's happening on Friday the 13th. So, I don't know if you agree with that.
I can see your point, but it just... it doesn't do anything for me, man.
Yeah. You know what? I'll tell you this. There was a funny part that I saw on a YouTube video recently where, you know, this one guy, you know, is hiding inside a locker, and another player is basically, like, trying to rat her out, you know, to Jason. And he was basically, you can hear him in voice chat saying, like, yeah, there's somebody, like, in the locker. Somebody, you should probably go for the person in the locker. So, you know, what the funny thing that happened is the girl gets out of the locker, and, you know, she sees, like, the guy, like, yelling all over the place, like, yeah, she's in the locker, and shoots him with a goddamn shotgun.
What?
because he was trying to rat her out, you know, so that he won't get killed. So of course, like, she just goes up and, like, just fucking shotguns him, stuns Jason, and basically, like, escapes the game because because the guy was being a dick. But that's an example, right? That's an example of something that can only happen in Friday the 13th because of how the game is built. Again, I'm not saying that it's the best built game of the year or whatever, but because those kinds of situations can occur, you know, within the realm of possibility, it makes for an interesting gaming experience. Now, if you want to compare this to how The Division handled PvP, you know, it's kind of weird, right? Because there's a, like, I feel like if you look at The Division, how they handled, you know, the kind of survival aspect in that game versus how Friday the 13th actually handles it, you would argue that Friday the 13th has a little bit more flexibility. It's almost like a chemistry set, if you will. It's the same kind of chemistry set that you played in Minecraft, in the newest Zelda, and the upcoming Mario game. You know, And again, like, it's because it's got that formula that's kind of like, okay, I kind of see why they didn't limit it so much, like, that they didn't prevent people from actually killing each other, because that actually makes an interesting experience. In terms of execution, I think it's kind of funny because I'm leaning towards Friday the 13th's execution of survival than The Division, how they did it in the danger zones and stuff. You know,
gotcha.
Like, it's more interesting because it's a lot more playful. It could be a lot more playful. So,
well, The Division, you know, that was built around a lot of farming for loot and stuff like that too.
Right. There's that as well. So I think that's also the reason why the danger zones and stuff actually didn't work, is because of the loot grind, you know. There's a different balance there if you want to talk about balance. So, but yeah, hopefully this answers your question, Tom. And again, if you guys have any questions, comments, or suggestions, email us at podcast@mybacklogbattle.tv. Or remember, if you are watching this or listening this on YouTube, you can actually, like, put a comment on the bottom. And we'll read some of them when we have time. But we're almost 2 hours here, so I think we gotta go, Anthony. So
yes, sir.
Yeah. So all right, guys, we'll see you guys later. Happy gaming, and remember, go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/mybacklogbattle. We'll see you guys next week. Happy gaming.